It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Yet another figure in Illinois politics is now at the center of a federal corruption trial. State Senator Emil Jones III of Chicago is accused of taking bribes from a red light camera company. His name rings out in Illinois politics in part because he's a legacy. His father, Emil Jones Jr., was president of the Illinois Senate from 2003 through 2009, and he had been a member of the General Assembly since 1973. One difference in this corruption case is that Jones III, the son, is still a state senator, and he was reelected unopposed just weeks after being charged back in 2022. Now, his political career and his freedom are at stake in federal court. The trial should be happening as we are going to air today. So earlier this morning, I spoke with Jason Meisner, who covers the federal courts for the Chicago Tribune. Jason, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us a little bit more about these accusations against Senator Jones.
Well, Senator Jones was charged in 2022 as part of a sprawling investigation into red light camera company bribery, as well as other forms of bribery that really crisscrossed the suburbs. This brought down a number of mayors, mayor of Crestwood, the mayor of Oak Brook Terrace, among others. But Emil Jones was one of the last to be charged. He was charged in 2022 with agreeing to take bribes from Omar Mani, who was a co-founder and former executive at SafeSpeed LLC, one of the big red light camera company operators in the suburbs. And he was originally expected to plead guilty, but that never happened. And now here we are a few years later, and he is on trial. Day four starts in about half an hour.
What is his alleged role in this scheme? Because one could understand, I guess, how a local official, right? You're putting up a camera in a particular municipality. Maybe the municipal leader takes some money in order to grease those skids. How would a state senator be involved?
Well, what we've learned is that these red light camera companies depend on lots of things in Springfield, including the very legislation that allows them to operate. And it's no secret that many, many people hate red light cameras. In fact, try to find me somebody who loves them. So there's
guilty as charged for me there.
Yeah, and that has come up in this trial. But there's constantly legislation being proposed, either trying to restrict them or maybe even ban them. I mean, so SafeSpeed is constantly, and other companies too, are constantly in Springfield with lobbyists trying to prevent that from happening. Now, where Emil Jones comes in is that he was actually an opponent that SafeSpeed was worried about, because he kept filing legislation to conduct a study, a statewide study, into red light cameras. And as Omar Mani, who was an FBI mole, testified yesterday, for SafeSpeed, any kind of study like that they see as a precursor to a ban. They were worried if you do a study, they're going to come up with something in the study to say this is why these cameras need to be banned. So they wanted Emil Jones on their side, and that's where Omar Mani comes in.
So you mentioned Omar Mani's testimony. What are some of the big takeaways from the actual trial so far?
Well, he's been the only witness so far. He was the first witness called, and he was on for 2 days. And he really, I mean, he's the centerpiece of the case. He's the star witness. He was the undercover mole who recorded not only Jones, but former Senator Martin Sandoval, who was also at the heart of this. And many, many others. He said dozens upon dozens upon dozens of people. He was undercover for almost 2 years, and he was just a very successful businessman. He was kind of a golden goose for the FBI. I mean, this guy had operations everywhere, all over the suburbs of Chicago, Melrose Park, you name it, Evergreen Park, Oaklawn. He was also a real estate developer, so he had contracts in other, like Cicero, also McCook, where the mayor there was charged and is now awaiting a prison sentence because of Omar Mani's cooperation. So we got to see Omar Mani for the first time. Everybody else in this case, maybe almost a dozen people by now, has pled guilty. Jones is the only one to go to trial. So that is why we got our first look at Omar Mani on the witness stand.
So I mentioned he is still a sitting state senator. He hasn't given up his seat. How much has Jones III been doing in Springfield since he was charged?
Not much from my colleagues in Springfield. Jeremy Gorner, one of our, I asked him to keep an eye out for him starting earlier this year when we knew it was going to trial. He has not been seen much. He doesn't do a lot of orating on the Senate floor, and he's been, you know, absent. Obviously, he's here in Chicago for his trial, but even before that, when the Senate reconvened last week, I believe, he hasn't been there and he hasn't been partaking in any votes.
Yeah. So how does this, you've covered a lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of corruption cases over the years at the courthouse in Chicago. How does this fit into the bigger picture of federal investigations and trials involving other Illinois politicians, you know, and especially one that we've talked a lot about is Speaker Madigan, of course.
Of course, yeah. And this investigation was kind of unfolding at the same time as the Madigan and Burke cases, which also involved an FBI mole named Danny Solis. So this stuff was all breaking. 2019, 2020 was pretty wild years. And in the annals of, I've been here for 10 years in this building, this SafeSpeed investigation is one of the biggest ones. I mean, it is rare to have a cooperator like Monty who is willing to do what he did for as long as he did and record as many as people as he did. It really shook up the Illinois General Assembly. I mean, and when you got a guy like Martin Sandoval, who pled guilty and was cooperating himself when he died of COVID in December 2020, if Sandoval, if that hadn't happened and he hadn't passed away, who knows who would have been charged, because Sandoval knew a lot. He was obviously corrupt, and he was talking to the feds and helping them. So it was a big investigation, and it could have been even bigger.
Just about a minute left in our time together, and I don't know if you can actually answer this next question, but given the sort of pivot away from public corruption that's been coming out of the Justice Department headquarters in Washington, do you have a sense that things are changing at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago that has been such a hotbed of this sort of policing for so long now?
It's probably too soon to answer that, but I sure hope not. I mean, Chicago has always prided itself as being kind of like doing its own thing. We have our issues, and our U.S. Attorney's Office and FBI, of course, they're going to get the priorities from Washington. That's just a given. And you got like terrorism and whatever Washington says should be your priority. But they also have operated, through Republican and Democratic administrations. Doesn't matter. George Ryan, Republican, Rob Blagojevich, it is without fear or favor, they like to say. So far, no changes. And I think everybody's hoping with a new interim U.S. attorney, Andrew Boutros here, a former Fed here, that's going to continue.
Jason Meisner covers the federal courts for the Chicago Tribune. Jason, of course, I know Jones has pleaded not guilty. We'll see how the trial shakes out. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me on.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're in the midst of our Friday review of political news, and we go now to what's been happening in Washington this week. Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's correspondent there, joins me now. We taped with her earlier this morning. Linda, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Always good to be here.
So 10% across the board tariffs on international trade took effect last weekend. President Trump's so-called reciprocal tariffs took effect Wednesday, except then he pressed pause for 90 days, but still raised tariffs on China, which has retaliated with its own tariffs on American goods. The 10% tariffs are still in place. Linda, help us understand what is going on.
Yeah, it's pretty head spinning right now, and the markets have been responding accordingly, because one of the things we can say with certainty about the market is that they hate uncertainty. And this tariff structure has certainly created a very large degree of uncertainty. So when the president announced what he called the reciprocal tariffs against dozens and dozens of nations, he said that they were firm and they would not be changed. And so we thought they were firm and would not be changed, except that all of a sudden, without warning, we heard the president announce that he was putting them on pause for 90 days, because all of those countries involved did not impose reciprocal tariffs in return, and they reached out to the United States because they wanted to negotiate. The one country that did not do either of those things was China. And so the president responded to China by raising tariffs to a level of 125%. And then we thought that that would be firm and permanent. And then we heard the next day that it was merely just a clerical oversight, for example, in that it wasn't really 125%. It was 145%. And that is because there was a 20% tariff that was not accounted for, that was already in effect because of fentanyl coming into the United States. So China now has a tariff of 145% to pay for absolutely every Chinese product that is imported into the United States of America. So again, creating some more market rallies, some more market dives, but nonetheless, a roller coaster ride and a lot of concerns about how it's affecting not only the national economy, but the global economy.
Uncertainty is the watchword. Is that really what happened here? I mean, you know, the president can say, well, we're going to negotiate, even though a bunch of his aides had said this is not negotiation. This is a new, you know, we're reshaping the global trading order. Is it just that he was spooked by what was happening in, I guess, not as much the equities markets, the stock markets, but the bond market?
Well, we tried to get an answer to that question. The press pool was in the Oval Office and did ask that question. You know, how long were you thinking about this? Was this a response to what was happening in the markets? And he said, you know, we've been thinking about it for a few days now. We've been talking over the past several days, in fact, he said. And then he said we decided to, in his words, pull the trigger in the early morning hours. Now, 4 hours before the announcement was made that the tariffs would be put on hold for a period of 90 days, the president posted on his Truth Social media platform that now was a good time to buy. In other words, go out there, buy low, sell high on the stock market. You know, the basic premise of trading. If you buy stocks when they aren't worth a whole lot of money, and then they go up, then you make a major profit. So that caused a lot of questions and head scratching afterward, and the possibility of an investigation, because presidents are not supposed to do anything that would appear to be market manipulation. And there is some concern that that statement alone caused some major fluctuations on the stock market, and that the president, of course, had the insider information that 4 hours later he would announce that he was putting those tariffs on hold. So that's one of the offshoots of this roller coaster ride that we're seeing right now.
Who could possibly investigate that, though?
Yeah, you know, how do you investigate that? I have no concept of how that would be done. I know that Senator Adam Schiff from the state of California is the one leading the charge for some kind of an investigation. A lot of Democrats are very concerned about this. A lot of people in Congress themselves, in fact, Marjorie Taylor Greene did trade on the stock market. Did she have insider information? We do not know. However, there has been a lot of question about that. And we did ask the White House press secretary about that. And she said the president has the right to discuss the economy and to reassure the American people. And then she cited Nancy Pelosi back in 1979 talking about insider trading. And that was a very odd tangent because Nancy Pelosi is not part of the equation right now.
And last I checked, has not ever been president of the United States giving stock advice on social media. So this 145% tariff, as we mentioned, is still in place on China. I mean, is this a significant shift in trade policy? One gets the sense from looking at how businesses are responding still, the, you know, investors, the markets are still up and down. They're all over the place. You know, is this still something that's a significant shift compared to where we were, say, I don't know, at the end of the Biden administration, a mere 2.5 months ago?
It is a major shift. And the president likes to harken back to the Biden administration, even the Obama administration. Even before that, he says for decades, the people who sat in this chair behind the resolute desk in the Oval Office, I blame them, he said. I don't blame China. I don't blame the European Union. I blame the leadership that didn't have the guts to do something about the unfair trade, the trade imbalance between the United States and its trading partners. They should have done something about it. And he also said that, when it comes to China and the European Union in particular, he says, if I had been in their position, I would have done the same thing. So, if you're looking out for your own country, he says, then that's what you would do. But he said that presidents should have stopped it a long time ago. So he does like to point the finger of blame at other people. And in this case, especially Biden and Obama.
We're talking politics. It's not a sort of finance segment, but I am going to recall something, an excellent comparison I heard from George Will a few months ago, talking about trade imbalances and why they're not always a bad thing. And he remarked that he had an incurable and permanent trade imbalance with the person who cuts his hair. He had paid that person a lot of money over the years. They had never bought anything from him. That is a trade imbalance. And there are reasons for that. One more story we didn't have time to get to today, and that I will just mention briefly. Governor J.B. Pritzker is apparently, reportedly, I should say, and this is from WTTW News, considering, or evaluating, I should say, is the word they used, a request from the United States House Oversight Committee about the state's laws designed to protect immigrants who are here without legal status. Apparently, this is would be a replay of the one, the hearing we saw with blue state mayors. Looks like they might be trying to do that with blue state governors. We will let you know when that story advances. Linda Kenyon, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.